Alright guys, welcome to Lecture 8 of Exploration in its freeform mood. Before I talk about stuff, does anybody have any questions? Steve will not be with us tonight. Does anybody have any questions or queries on the stuff that they have theoretically read up to this point?
Yeah, about dynamic routing and exactly how much of a routing table would an internet router that was intermediate have on the hold? Would it hold just the immediate next hot routers, or would it be several layers deeper than that?
An internet router that contains BGP routes on the internet backbone requires 256 meg of RAM to hold the routing table.
All right, so it would have a fairly comprehensive routing table in that case, obviously. That's kind of interesting.
Well, if it's on the backbone and it's one of the core routers that's talking to different places and it needs to know a lot about the internet topology, you're looking at 256 meg of RAM for the BGP table and a fair bit of processor. Obviously, smaller ISPs and stuff will have a much smaller routing table, because generally speaking, they deal with the routes to their client subnets, and then they deal with a route to their service provider. So, say for example, you're looking at Dodgycom Proprietary Limited, which is a little internet provider. They've, say for example, got a link to Telstra. And they might have a link to Optus, so they might have a link to Telstra, they might have a link to Optus. So their routing table holds two routes, one for Optus, one for Telstra, and then anything for the routes that they're actually dealing with as far as their clients are concerned. Although generally speaking, internet service providers do not broadcast the availability of routes out onto the backbone. Generally speaking, they have an address prefix that's delegated to them, and all of the traffic that comes to them is then handled by them, so you don't usually see internet service providers advertising routes for clients unless they've got quite large network demands or similar.
All right, so if they're transferring traffic for someone like Netflix or whatever, then obviously they would need a more direct connection to the backbone. So would a tier 3 provider then have a link directly to the tier 2 provider and then have routes to the tier 1 or just to the tier 2?
It depends on the agreement. Generally speaking, you just link to the tier 2 providers if you're a tier 3 provider, and the tier 1 providers would be expected to carry sufficient routing information for the internet backbone.
Righty, that clears that up, Kerry. Thanks very much. That was the main question from today's read.
Alrighty. Anybody else got any questions on things? I'm not really willing to do this subnetting stuff today because Steve's not present. I might find something else to go on about, because it's important that everybody's here for the subnetting stuff, which is the stuff I'm looking at in Module 6. Well, I did do some of the subnetting. I did some of the subnetting stuff last week, didn't I? With the network portion and the host portion, and all the host portion bits set to 0 being the network address, and all of the host bits set to 1 being the broadcast address. I'm pretty sure I've talked about that this term.
Yeah, you covered quite a lot of that last week.
All right. Then there's a binary exercise, which I think most of you guys have submitted, which I've got to sit through and mark. And then there's a subnet exercise one, which is the busy builders. That is going to be due by the week after next, and I will announce that to the mailing list. So you want subnet exercise one, busy builders one, for the week after next, and hopefully you will have questions about that between now and the week after next, or you might not get it right.
Are they both in extras?
No, they're in they're in the extras folder of the ITE 1 lab folders. The reason they're in extras is because I wrote them, Cisco didn't.
Okay, right, cool.
Okay, so just to review this stuff, the Tier 1s are at the top of the tree. They are at the internet backbone. The Tier 2s provide services to businesses, etc. DNS, VoIP, etc. They connect up to the Tier 1 providers. And Tier 3 get all of the teenagers on Facebook. It's important that if you're being allocated globally routable IP addresses, i.e. addresses that are routable on the internet, that you conserve them, because we're running out of IPv4 addresses. Don't get Saberhatten started or it'll never stop. And you need to conserve your IPv4 addresses, and you should be using IPv6 addresses anyway. Don't get Saberhatten started or he won't stop. And if you want to use IPv6, you will need to look for either a tunneling provider such as Freenet6 or various other tunneling providers. Check out the IPv6 Cavicast that I did last year. I think I did one or two of them in our handy dandy podcast feed. Getting direct IPv6 connectivity is still probably relatively problematic for many users. However, I believe Comcast is rolling out minimal direct IPv6 connectivity. It certainly also exists in Japan and Asia, and I think Internode is providing IPv6 connectivity over here. What is a tunneling provider? Well, that's a good question. It is a provider that wraps IPv6 traffic up in IPv4 traffic and shovels it around the place until the time that there is sufficient infrastructure to allow a lot more native IPv stacking. So most people will be running in dual stack mode, which is IPv4 and IPv6 on the same host. Mac OS 10.4, or was it 10.5? Do you remember, Saberhatten, whether 10.4 had IPv6? I thought it did.
I think that they started, was it 10.2 it first came out, but it was sort of flaky. And then it appeared in the UI in 10.4, I think.
Okay, so 10.4, or Windows XP had IPv6 that you could install by opening a command prompt and going IPv6/install. Windows 2003 Server and Windows 2000 had a developer preview of IPv6 support. However, it existed natively in Vista and Windows 7. Handy hint, everybody, if you are using a home group, and I would be asking myself why, but if you are using a home group, turning off IPv6 will kill your home group dead. That's a hard thing to find in Microsoft's documentation, but it is in there. Home groups rely on IPv6 link local addresses to function.
I wondered why I had three IPv6 addresses in my routing table. Ha ha.
Indeed. A link local address is an address that usually starts with FE80 colon and some stuff, and basically they take a in address auto assignment, you actually take the 48-bit MAC address and you do some scrambling with it and you generate yourself an IP address, a bit like the automatic IP address allocation of Windows with IPv4. Has anyone seen those 169.254 addresses when the DHCP is unavailable?
Yeah,
I've seen them, but even more now with the FE80 colon address.
Well, FE80 is a link local address, and it basically hashes the MAC address that's attached to your network card, comes up with a unique address, and it uses a neighbor discovery algorithm in IPv6 to make sure it doesn't collide with anything else. Link local addresses are only valid on your local subnet, only on your local segment. So they are only valid on your local segment, on your local segment, on your local segment. They will not travel the internet. They are like 192.168.1.blah behind a network address translator. So home group uses the link local addresses to communicate on the one network segment. That's why it's called a home group. Is this in your notes? No, but I think it's important. The next thing you're going to ask...
I can't remember. Is it Vista and 7 that enable Teredo now by default? I forget. That's the only other, I guess, treachery zone, because if you don't have native V6 of any other kind, it likes to tunnel.
There are actually problems with the implementation of Teredo under... well, there are problems with Teredo, as you'd well know. Teredo, by the way, is named after a particular species of ship worm that burrows into the hull of ships. It's they were going to call it shipworm, but they thought that calling it shipworm wasn't a good idea, so they called it Teredo instead. It's a method of tunneling IPv6 packets over IPv4 infrastructure. Generally, I think Vista did used to configure Teredo by default. However, Teredo is set as a fallback mechanism. It's not set as the primary tunneling mechanism. And as far as I know, Teredo is not activated by default under Windows 7. And it's deactivated by default under Vista Service Pack 1, to my knowledge. You may have to check that.
It has been a while since I've played with Windows IPv6, so I'll have to play with it.
What can I say? VMware Fusion on your Mac is good for you. Maybe. Okay, so when you're planning a network, you've got to ask yourself the question whether you're going to, which hosts need private addresses, which hosts need public addresses. You've got two ways of making content and hosts accessible from outside the network. You can either do port forwards inside of your network, torrenting anyone, but you can also use port forwards for web servers and various other aspects, or you can have machines inside your network with publicly routable IP addresses. VoIP does not work well through network address translators, so unless you are dealing with network address translators that are configured to specifically handle VoIP, and the problem with VoIP is that it puts its IP addresses inside the payload of the packets, so you can't tell which host stuff is destined to without actually opening up the packets. And there are other internet protocols that embed destination addresses inside the payload of the packet rather than the headers, which makes it difficult for network address translators to handle them. If you have hosts that are inside your network that need to communicate with each other but they do not need to be externally routable, you might as well assign those private IP addresses. Hosts that need to be externally routable, you either need to perform some funnies with routing or actually provide them with externally routable IP addresses. Generally speaking, most users are handed one globally routable IP address by default, although some ISPs are nasty enough to actually hand you out a private address and sit you behind what they believe is a relatively transparent network address translator. And that will probably start happening more and more until we manage to get more IP addresses and move up to something that is somewhat better. Can't hear you, your microphone's moved.
Sorry, try that again. Iano recently assigned a block for that use, shared space.
For which use?
NAT behind NAT.
Okay, fair enough. So then the next thing you've got to ask yourself is which IP addresses do you assign statically and which IP addresses do you assign dynamically? Can anybody tell me which sort of IP addresses you would assign statically rather than dynamically?
Ones where a client would need to find a server, for example, that they wouldn't want to be hunting around for whatever the new IP address was every time it was dynamically reassigned.
Yep, generally for devices that aren't going to change their configuration often, and servers and hosts that need static IP addresses. There is another reason why you might want to assign static IP addresses. If you are a home user sitting on a home router and you need port forwards to a particular machine because you're torrenting or running a web server or something, you may wish to assign that machine a static IP address so that you're not relying on Universal Plug and Play to actually perform the port forwards. Universal Plug and Play being a system where devices can request port forwards from routers with questionable levels of security as a result. The problem with static assignment is that you need to enter IP address, subnet mask, DNS servers, and gateway. And if the work experience kid gets them wrong, the machine doesn't work very well. Often it is easier for workstations and stuff to hand out this information using a DHCP server, which stands for Dynamic Host Control Protocol, not configuration like everybody thinks. It's important to keep a list of your statically assigned addresses. Well, duh, but people still don't do it. I remember working for a network administrator where he said, if you need another IP address, just ping something, and if it doesn't respond, you can assign that one. Well, that worked well until the server that I'd assigned the address on top of got booted up, and we had an address conflict. So I tended to caution against that behaviour, and I would suggest that a register of IP addresses that you're statically assigning would be a really good idea. DHCP leases addresses from a pool. You can do static assignments, but you can also have a pool of IP addresses, and a lot of home routers just take the addresses 2 through 254, or if you've got a Linksys router, it's usually 100 through 200, and assigns them to the machines in the order that you power them up. And if the router hasn't been rebooted, or the machine hasn't tried to request a lease that it had before, they will just be assigned randomly depending on which machines come online on which in which order. Okay, so if you're testing the network layer, you're using ping and traceroute. Ping is the thing that sends your echo request packets and you see if you get a reply. Ping www.google.com, which surprisingly still works. Ping www.cisco.com or www.microsoft.com doesn't tend to work. Also notice that if your firewall is misconfigured to drop all ICMP, you won't see the ping packets come back, and in some situations you will actually find that pinging doesn't work because the firewall ditches the packets, which is not very helpful. Traceroute is a utility that we talked about last week that shows you the hops from one end of the internet to the other, and I think Windows 7 Traceroute has IPv6 support. So you can go traceRT:\.6:www.kame.net, and if you have IPv6 connectivity, you will actually see IPv6 addresses instead of IPv4 addresses, which is kind of cool. Also, if you have IPv6 configured, you get to see the dancing turtle, otherwise you see the boring one. I suppose that's kind of cool. ICMP, Internet Control Message Protocol, is a set of messages that is sent and received by various hosts to indicate network problems. Host unreachable, network unreachable, that's important because it tells you that you can't get to something. Connection refused is another one. You also have time exceeded, which is what Traceroute uses to tell you that the packet's been through too many hops. Time being number of hops, not as time in seconds. Source quench says, I've had too many packets, that's enough. Don't send me any more. There is also fragment fragmentation required is another one. And if ever you've had the problem with too large an MTU, if you've got a 1500 MTU over a PPPoE link and you're not at Sabahattin's place, you will find that the packets that go over a PPPoE link on ADSL are 1,492 bytes rather than 1,500 bytes, which means SSHing into a Unix machine works fine, but web pages freeze up. And you need to either enable MSS clamping on the ADSL modem, which is usually done by default, unless, of course, it's one of those really complicated routers like a Cisco or a MikroTik or something that doesn't make any assumptions for you. Or you can you can configure a smaller MTU on your local machines. There are all sorts of utilities for Windows that are designed to optimize your TCP performance, such as Dr. TCP. I don't know. Generally speaking, I would say if you fiddle with it and it breaks, you keep both pieces. Make sure you've got registry backups, and even better, try and make sure you actually know what you're doing. Any questions on any of that? All right. Anything else anybody want to talk about this week before I dash off and mark labs? Because I'm quite happy to start on data link layer next week because it's quite a reasonable sized topic. All right. Have an early mark, everyone.
Kerry, is it possible that I might have some exams open for next week? Because I'm going to do labs 5 and 6 tomorrow and then probably do some exams next week.
Yep, send an email to expiration instructors and I'll activate them for you.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, see you all next week, folks. Bye.
Cheerio.